What is up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Sean Jones NBA Show. I'm recording this on Wednesday, May 7th. Want to apologize for the lack of episodes coming out over the last few weeks. I've been very busy, though I have still been able to be tapped into these games. So we're going to cover the second round and the first couple games that we've seen out of these four series. We are five games in and the home team is winless. All five games have been won by the road team. That's the first time that's ever happened. It's even the first time that all four teams at home have gone down 0-1 ever in the second round. And so this episode is really going to be focused on where should these teams be on the panic meter? Should they be worried or should they write it off as, you know, it's game one. It happens. Where it was a feeler game. We will be okay. We didn't shoot well, etc. So I'll talk through all the four series, particularly the four home court advantage teams that were not able to win and see if they should be worried or not. But with that said, let's go ahead and get right into it. First off, I just want to say that these games have been ridiculously good. This has just been an awesome playoffs. I think that the physicality has been just the perfect amount, you know, not where it feels like they're fighting out there, but also just totally different brand of basketball from the regular season. The product has been spectacular, and we've had some insane games, some great comebacks, some brutal collapses, some awesome individual performances. Just everything across the board so far in this postseason has been great, in my opinion. We've had some multiple game sevens, and this round alone is off to a tremendous start. I mean, those three comebacks that we saw consecutively on a two-night span were just unlike any three-game span of NBA games at this level that I've ever seen, really. So just want to start off by saying that before I get into any of the individual series. So I'm going to start off with the Pacers and Cavs series, which had game two take place last night. After, you know, a bit of an upset in game one, it looked like Cleveland was fully prepared to take advantage of the desperation that they needed to play with in order to not go down 0-2 with both games being at home. Even without Evan Mobley, without Darius Garland, without DeAndre Hunter, Cleveland built up a 20-point lead multiple times. They led by 20 in the first. Pacers cut it all the way down to 8. They built that lead back up to 20 points in that third quarter. And they had a 14-point lead going into the fourth quarter. But those Indiana Pacers, they don't die. They just stick around. And the later the game gets, the higher the stakes, it seems like the better they play. Especially this year compared to last. I know last year they had some close games against Boston that they just couldn't pull out. But it seems like they have fully learned from those experiences. And this year, you have to absolutely shut the door on them, because if you don't, they can make some crazy things happen. And last night, they were down 7 with 48 seconds remaining in the game, somehow pulled it out. This is less than a week after they were down 7 points to Milwaukee with under 40 seconds to go and somehow managed to win that game. Both times, they didn't even need to force an extra overtime period. They won it outright in those 40 to 50 seconds that they had, which is just insane. That has only happened 3 times in NBA history in the postseason that a team has been up 7 or more points with under 50 seconds to go and ended up winning. And 2 of them are the Pacers in just the last week, in 2 of their last 3 games. And, you know, this was as much a Cavaliers collapse as it was the Pacers making big plays. Indiana needed maybe 4 or 5 different things to kind of break their way to even have a chance to win that game down the stretch. And all of them happened. You know, just in the last 57 seconds, Cleveland allowed 3 separate offensive rebounds. They committed an offensive foul that was almost a flagrant as well. And they turned the ball over on an inbounds play. All in less than a minute. The way it broke down, Siakam missed 2 free throws, but then Nesmith was there for a putback dunk to cut it to 5. Then Mitchell turns it over on what was almost a flagrant play. Then Siakam gets a layup. Nembhard then steals the inbound pass. Cleveland just, I mean, it wasn't even close. They threw it right to him. Halliburton drives, gets fouled, makes the first free throw, then misses the second, but somehow Turner tips it back to Halliburton. And Halliburton hits the step back 3 to take the lead with 1 second left. Cleveland had no timeouts and they somehow snuck it out. And Look, I don't know how Indiana keeps doing this. I picked Pacers in seven in this series. It's sure is looking like not only are they going to win, but I'm not even sure it's going to need to go seven games at this point. But they just have guys that are relentless, that play hard. You know, Andrew Nembhard, Aaron Nesmith, dudes that compete defensively, make big shots down the stretch. And Tyrese Halliburton is proving to be one of the most clutch players in the NBA right now. He's 10 for 11 on shots to tie or take the lead under 2 minutes this season, with multiple of those coming in the postseason. So, you know, the whole most underrated player, he was voted. I think that was kind of bogus at the time anyway, because he's proven to be, in my eyes, a top 20, top 15 player in the league with his play and how he commands the offense. And, you know, the way he's able to be so dominant as a playmaker without being so ball dominant, which is very unique across the NBA in the modern era. And he's also proving now that when he's a little bit more aggressive hunting his shot, he can be absolutely deadly, not only with the step back threes, but also getting to the basket, which in my opinion, he needs to utilize more, because he clearly, I mean, we saw it against Milwaukee blowing right by Giannis for the game winning layup in that series. But Indiana, they look like they're in the driver's seat right now. I have been preaching this for a while now that they are a lot better than people are giving them credit for. They are a significantly improved defensive team from a year ago. They're 40 and 15 in the calendar year of 2015, which, I mean, that is elite. That's right at 60 win pace right there. You know, they basically played at the same level as the Clevelands, the Bostons of the world since the calendar turn, which that was 4 months ago. So over 4 months sample of them playing at this level. And I've been saying that they are to be taken seriously. They're a better version of what they were last year because they're more experienced. Siakam's had a full year and a half to get acclimated with this group. And Rick Carlisle is a damn good coach. I think he gets slept on a little bit as well as a guy that has his teams playing their best basketball when it matters the most. And Cleveland is in trouble. They are very much in trouble. If we're talking panic level for them, I think it is extremely high, because they are so banged up right now and they needed to get that game. And it's just a shame because they had it. You know, all they had to do is make one less stupid play and they probably win that game. But they collapsed. It was a major choke job on their end. And Donovan Mitchell had a ridiculous game in game two, 48 points. But their formula in this series so far has been a lot more reminiscent of previous versions of the Cavaliers than this year's Cavs team, because this year's Cavs team, Mitchell took a step back a little bit in terms of offensive force for them. Obviously still had a phenomenal year, likely going to make first team all NBA and was the leading scorer on the team, but he was allowing the other guys to get theirs a little bit more offensively, making the right play a little bit more frequently. But we've kind of seen him revert back a little bit to some of his ISO hero ball antics that we've seen in the past, which, when he's making his shots, they're hard to beat when he's doing that. But the three-point shot has been absolutely not there for him in this series. He's 2 for 18 from deep overall. But the bigger issue is that he's taken 60 field goal attempts in two games. That's 30 shots per game. And he has taken 30 shots 10 times since coming to the Cavs, two of them in this series. So he's clearly upped his field goal attempts to a level that even has been abnormal for his Cavaliers career, which it just hasn't been a great formula. They are 3-7 in those games when he has 30 plus field goal attempts. And I get it. You want him to be more aggressive, because with no Garland, there's really no other initiation on the offensive end outside of Ty Jerome, who's having just an atrocious series so far in this one. He was 1 for 14. In the game last night, he's shooting 27% overall, 13% from three. He's getting shots up, but they are just really not falling to this point. And I think it's not surprising. He was a spectacular this season, deserving of consideration for Sixth Man of the Year. I thought deserving of consideration for Most Improved Player. But we're seeing the limitations of being thrust into that kind of role with that kind of responsibility and these kind of leverage situations. But with other than him, they don't have any other really creators on this team. It's a lot of, you know, 3 and D. They're asking like guys like Max Strus to create more than, you certainly would like them to. And Mobley's even a good secondary creator a little bit offensively, but then he didn't play in this game either. And Garland has now missed their last four games, and that spans, you know, over a couple weeks because they had a pretty big layoff between the two series. DeAndre Hunter as well missed it. So they need to get those guys back ASAP, because I don't see any way that they even come close to making this a series if those guys miss even one more game. I would think Indiana would take care of business at home, if maybe even sweep them, which is crazy to say out loud. But if they get those guys back, I still think they have like a puncher's chance. You know, we saw just last year, Denver goes down 0-2 at home, and then they win the next three games, two of those being on the road. So I can't rule that out for Cleveland. They've been a dominant team all season long. But I do have my concerns, because they've been a lot more Mitchell reliant in these two games, and that has not been the formula for their success. And so they need to get their guys back so they can share the ball a little bit more and play their brand of basketball, which they haven't been doing. But panic meter is very high for Cleveland in this series so far. You know, I think they absolutely need to win game three. Obviously, no team's ever come down from back 0-3, so it's a must win. If they lose that game, this series is over, even if everybody is back. But I think even if they do get their guys back, it's going to be more difficult to come back than people think, because Indiana's good. They're really, really good. They're well coached. They're underratedly very improved defensively. They've been a top 10 team for months now on that end of the court. We know what they can do offensively. They're as deep as any team in the league. And Haliburton is playing at an all-NBA level right now. Siakam is a great secondary option. Nembhard, Nesmith, these guys have been playoff risers over the past couple of years, making big shots down the stretch in some of these games and competing defensively as well. So I'm worried for Cleveland. We'll see if they can bounce back, but it's really not looking good for them, and I don't have too much confidence in it at this point. I picked Indiana before the series. I only feel better about that right now. I know a lot of that is due to injury, but nonetheless, I think that they would have had a chance to win it even without these injuries, because that's how good of a team I think they are this season. Then going to the other game last night, the Warriors and the Timberwolves in game one of this series. I picked the Timberwolves to win this one in five, but that is not how last night went at all, as Minnesota scored only 31 points in the first half, put up a really, really poor showing across the board. They only managed 88 points in the whole game. Anthony Edwards started 0 of 10 from the field, only had 1 point in the first half, just continues to struggle from deep. He went 0 for 11 from three in the closeout game to the Lakers. Then in the game last night, only 1 for 5 from three, and I think he made his last one. So that's an 0 for 15 stretch right there, and still only 1 for 16 in his last two games. The Wolves as a team were 5 for 29 from three after going 7 for 47 in the closeout game to the Lakers. So something's off from this team from a shooting perspective. They were one of the better three-point shooting teams in the regular season. I think they were top five in percentage. But they started, I think, 0 for 16 in this game or something like that. They were 0 for 15 in halftime. And, you know, they were down 10 points when Steph Curry gets hurt. But the Warriors built that lead up to 23 points. And I think sometimes when you have these injuries mid-game, it throws you off a little bit, even as the team who didn't have the injury, because you had game plan to have that guy there. So they didn't know how to react. I'm sure the majority of their game plan was probably how to stop Steph. They're going to double him here, do coverages based on how he's cutting around the court and how they're playing him. But then when he leaves, it's kind of like, oh, well, what do we do now? So obviously, I think that Minnesota, this is not a good look to lose this game because of just how limited the rest of the Warriors team is offensively, but I can kind of get it from that perspective. But it was concerning for Minnesota. You know, I thought Julius Randle looked more like the Knicks playoff Julius Randle version of himself that we've seen in the past, only 4 of 11 from the field. I talked about Anthony Edwards and how he got off to an atrocious start, but I will, you know, give him a little bit of credit because he had 14 rebounds in this game, 3 steals. And after starting 0-10, went 9 for his next 12. And the best part about that is that he stopped settling. He wasn't making shots from outside over the last couple games now. And so he decided, I'm going to get it to the basket. And he pretty much got to the basket at will whenever he wanted, once he decided that that's what he was going to do. And the Warriors got some Great contributions out of Buddy Hield once again. His shooting numbers don't look great, 7 for 19, but I think he started 0 of 7 or something, so went 7 of his last 12. He had 24 points. Draymond was lighting it up from 3 in the first half, started 4 of 5 from deep. Butler didn't shoot particularly well, but was still 2 assists shy of a triple-double. So they did just enough, and where they shined was on the defensive end, holding Minnesota to only 88 points, as I mentioned. But obviously, the headliner here is that Steph Curry is out, and it was a hamstring strain, as reported by a lot of the national media members. And I think people need to level set expectations here, because those things take time. It is a matter of weeks, not days, typically with a hamstring strain. We have seen players try to rush back from those. Just look at OG Anunoby last year against Indiana. I think it was game 3. He hurts that hamstring, tries to come back for game 7, couldn't manage more than 4 minutes. They pulled him immediately because he couldn't move. And so you're at very high risk of either re-injuring it or just being so limited from a mobility perspective that you're not able to be even remotely effective. And for a guy like Steph, who has made a living off of running around the court, coming off screens, getting himself open, if he can't move, then he's going to be a severely compromised version of himself. But aside from that, I don't think he's probably going to play in game 2, 3, or 4. I think based on what I've seen with these hamstring injuries in the past, game 5 is maybe the earliest he could come back to play, could even be game 6, which that means the Warriors need to win at least one more game without him, which is possible, but I think it's going to be really difficult. I know Minnesota has struggled offensively, but this is the kind of game that the Warriors are going to need to win without him. They are not going to be able to put up 105, 110, 115 points without Steph. You can't rely on Buddy Hield against a high-level team like Minnesota in the second round. And so as big of a win as this was for them, they needed it. Because if they lost this game, and it was never really in question. I think Minnesota got it down to 9 points or something like that at one point. But if they lost this game, this series would have effectively been over, in my opinion. And so Minnesota is getting a little bit of a lot of bailed out here, because that was an absolute stinker performance. But there are some positives to come away if you're Minnesota, aside from just the Steph injury. I thought Rudy Gobert was very effective in using his size, just like he was against the Lakers towards the latter half of that series. He has been an issue. You know, the Warriors had to counter, as opposed to in the past, we've seen a lot of times where Gobert teams have to counter by taking him out. But he was a problem on the offensive glass. He even got some dunks using his bigger body over smaller defenders. Also, like I mentioned, I think Ant, once he started trying to get downhill to the basket, you quickly realize that he can do it pretty easily on this Golden State team, because they just don't have any rim protection. There's nobody there once he drives by his guy. And as great as Draymond is, and this team is defensively overall, that's the kind of counter that I'm not sure that they have one for. And I just don't think they're going to shoot this badly for a whole series. I know it's been 2 games of this now, but 0 of 15 is pretty ridiculous. Ant's not going to start 0 of 10 in all these games. And so if Ant had even started 3 of 10, then we might be talking about a whole different ball game in this. But credit to Golden State. I think Steve Kerr has had a tremendous postseason so far. He's shortened the rotation when he's needed to, like in game 7 against Houston. Looked like he only trusted like 4 or 5 guys. But then last night, plays 12 guys. Starts throwing stuff at the wall, sees what's working, and goes with the guys who proved to be more effective. I thought the counter going to Looney really shifted back the momentum last night. As I mentioned, Gobert had kind of started to impose himself a little bit, but once Looney came back in, that was no longer the case. He started even getting offensive boards himself. The momentum swung right back to Golden State after that. And also credit to Draymond, because it's crazy what he's doing in his mid to late 30s. The fact that he at 6'7" max from a height perspective is able to be so effective as a defender at this age in these types of high stakes physical playoff games. There is really not another defender in my lifetime that I've seen that is as good and versatile and consistent as him come postseason time. And I just want to give him his flowers because for as annoying as he is, and I've been a guy that's not been a huge fan of him as a person over the years, between he's complained to the refs, his dirty plays, the suspensions, all that, it is hard to deny just how much of a difference maker he is on that end of the court. And he's dictating everything on offense as well, even when Steph is out there, basically playing point forward for them half the time. And just the leadership, the experience, all of that, it's undeniable. And so credit to Draymond. He is truly a first ballot Hall of Famer, in my opinion, and he's showing why. And there's been talks of his decline over the past few seasons, and he can still turn it up, and he's still got a good amount in the tank. And I think any team would be salivating over the idea of having him on their roster. But for the next few games, I think that Golden State's in a lot of trouble here. So back to the panic meter for the Wolves. If Steph had not gotten hurt, you might start to think about pressing the panic button a little bit. It's not like one game losing in game one when you've had a little bit of a layoff, maybe a little rusty with the shots, is a huge deal. But there were some things that Golden State did a really good job of making them uncomfortable. I thought Minnesota's offense was very fast-paced and frenetic, but not in an effective way. It was forcing them to be really sloppy with the ball. They couldn't really get in any rhythm. And guys were just forcing stuff across the board. And I didn't think I think on paper you'd want them to be fast-paced because I think Golden State's a little better in a half-court setting, maybe on both ends of the court. But they were just, I don't know if it was like nerves a little bit or they just were rusty to be that sloppy. And okay, as I am recording this right now, news just came out that Steph is going to be out for at least a week. So that's maybe three games right there that he's going to miss. So at best, a game five comeback, as I mentioned. So look, Golden State, they have a real shot to lose the next three games legitimately and be down 3-1. Game five back in Minnesota. Of course, you can't totally rule them out with Steph Curry, Draymond, and Steve Kerr at that point. But if Steph is compromised in any capacity, which I think there's a good chance he is, it's going to just be really difficult. And so with the injury, I'm not overly worried for the Wolves in this one, but they need to not play with the food here. You know, they need to win every single game that Steph is out, because if they can't take care of business against a team with Buddy Hield as their second option or Brandon Pajemski, depending on the night, you know, Jimmy Butler has not really looked like himself since that tailbone injury that he had. He still has had some decent games, but hasn't been able to like explode offensively in a big way like we've seen him do in the past. And that's really the only path that I see for Golden State is if Jimmy Butler decides to ramp it up and is putting up his 35 point per game playoff series like we've seen him do in the past. But outside of that, I really think Minnesota is in the driver's seat here. But again, they need to take care of business, which is easier said than done, because last night they looked like a shell of themselves. They looked a lot more like the team in the conference finals against the Mavs last year than they did and the team in the first round this year against the Lakers. They looked sloppy offensively. They weren't making shots and they were scrambling a little bit defensively as well. I know that Golden State only had 99 points, but they give up 36 points in that third quarter without Steph Curry. And that basically lost them the game. If they hold them down to, you know, 25 points in that quarter, then they have a real shot to win this thing. So panic meter, not high on Minnesota as of now, but they need to handle business while Steph is out, because if they don't, and this is somehow 2-2 with Steph coming back, then they could be in legitimate trouble. But this is very unfortunate for Golden State, obviously, and you never want to see a guy like Steph get hurt in the postseason. And this was supposed to be one of the most fun series, in my opinion, but we'll see if that actually plays out. Probably not, unfortunately. Then moving to the games we had the other night, the New York Knicks defeated the Boston Celtics in game one of that series, 108-105 in overtime earlier this week. This was a game that Boston led by 20 points at one point in the third quarter before the Knicks went on a huge run that happened very quickly. It felt like in the matter of just a few minutes, that lead was down to single digits, and then they just kept coming. Boston was stagnant offensively, not able to get a lot going. And Brunson hit some huge shots down the stretch, thought he was maybe going to make that game winner. That was one of the easier shots he had, and he still didn't make it. But in overtime, they thoroughly outplayed Boston, held them to only 5 points across those 5 minutes. And the Knicks, pretty shocking fashion. I think a lot of people thought this is going to be a quick series. I had Celtics in six, but I'm not overly concerned overall for Boston to this point because, I mean, are they really going to go 15 for 60 from three-point range again? I mean, this was the most missed three-pointers in a game in NBA history. You got Holiday 2 for 7, Brown 1 for 10, Tatum 4 for 15, White 5 for 16, Horford 1 for 5, Hauser 0 for 2. Like, nobody could buy a bucket from outside. And it was kind of the perfect storm for New York to win this game. I mean, Boston could not make a shot at all. It was really not a good Tatum game, really not a good Brown game. I thought Tatum really settled a lot. There was a lot of times, especially late in the game, where he had what should have been maybe a mismatch where he could drive to the basket. Instead, was looking like Tatum from 2 years ago, settling for step back threes. Also, just if you're going to take a jump shot, maybe mix it up a little bit, go a little bit in the mid range. That used to be a big part of Tatum's game that he's kind of cut out a lot in recent years. And a lot of that's just because he's been better at getting the basket, but he didn't do much of that in this game either. So I would have liked to see him do a little bit of that. I mean, 15 out of his 23 shots coming from three. I don't think that's the shot diet they necessarily want out of him, because he's the one guy outside of probably Jaylen Brown that can operate a little better inside the three-point arc for this team. Jaylen Brown kind of looks like a compromised version of himself. You know, he was spectacular for this team in the postseason last year, but has just not looked as spry this year. Just doesn't have the same bounce, the same lift. His shot has not fallen at the rate that, you know, I think they would hope for. He's got more turnovers than assists in the postseason so far. And yeah, he just doesn't look like the same imposing physical presence that he has last year, and really even the year before that, the last few seasons. Then Kristaps Porzingis leaves this game with an illness, which, you know, normally you'd be like, okay, illness, not a big deal. I'm sure I'll be back for the next game. But the guy missed half the season, and a big chunk of that was because of some undisclosed illness that they gave very little reporting on. And so if he missed that much time during the season and then now was missing postseason play for the same thing, you have to think that it may not just be this one-off thing. I mean, this has compromised his entire season. And I don't know if they're as well equipped to survive without him like they were last year, because this Knicks team, for all the flaws they have and all of the, you know, shit that they've gotten over the last couple of months, just with their defensive issues and not being able to beat top teams, they're the best team that probably Boston has played over the last year and a half in the postseason, you know, this year or last year. And so I don't know if they're going to be able to get by without Porzingis, because Horford's going to have to play big minutes. And you've got Sam Hauser, who also got hurt in this game, so they're down one more body there. Can they play Horford close to 40 minutes a game? Because if they're not, they're going to have to rely on a lot of Luke Kornet. They're not going to be able to do any sort of two big lineups unless you want to, you know, play Nemeas Kata some minutes. But it's just a lot of different external things going on. I mean, Brown has had that lingering injury. Tatum got banged up in round one. Jrue Holiday missed multiple games in round one. And so I'm not worried for Boston yet, I'll say, because like I said, a lot of things had to go right for the Knicks to win this game. But the injuries do start to, you know, add up. And if Brown isn't going to be the same version of himself, and Porzingis is just a huge question mark whether he's going to play or be 100% when he does play, because he didn't look very good when he was out there already anyway. Jrue Holiday and Tatum have had injuries in the postseason already. Hauser's out. Like, a lot of that depth is starting to get eaten into. Guys aren't playing as well as they did last year. Horford has another year on his belt and is one of the oldest players in the league, and it's a lot to ask out of him to play him 35 to 40 minutes a night. And it's just a lot to... It's a lot of things to need to overcome, and I think that the East is better this year than it was last year with some of the injuries that plagued the teams in the field last year. And the Knicks are healthy right now, and they've got a really solid top five guys, even though they're not very deep. But if Boston's going to be injured, they're not going to be very deep either. And so it's going to, it could come down to a war of attrition here where the Knicks are just healthier. And so they're able to take advantage. But of course, I'm not ready to go that far yet because I think Boston, they're prone to some of these shooting nights, but I thought they got a lot of really good looks. I'm not going to discredit New York. I thought they were running them off the line pretty well, but Boston had a lot of wide open shots that just didn't go in. A lot. Like, you don't shoot 63s unless that's what the defense is giving you and you're getting open looks. That's a lot of threes to shoot. And I know that's what Boston does, but they didn't shoot 50 contested threes. You know what I mean? I think more than half of them were maybe wide open and they still weren't able to really take advantage. So they're going to make more shots. Tatum, I think, needs to play better. It's only one game, so I'm not going to jump to any conclusions there, but I think they're going to need him to be the best player in the series, and he was not the best player in game one. Brunson definitely outplayed him. OG Anunoby definitely outplayed him. He was super impactful on the defensive end and also had 29 points in this game, was 6-for-11 from three, made some huge plays down the stretch as well, especially during that big comeback. So like I said, not worried, but Boston needs to bounce back in game two, which I fully expect them to. I don't think that they are going to go down 0-2. And also, they're one of those teams that's weirdly been kind of better on the road than at home in the postseason. So I'm not really worried about them having to go into New York to win games, even though I'm sure this is going to be a really awesome environment. But, you know, the Knicks, they're a good team. I've preached this all year. I didn't think they had a huge chance to beat Boston. I picked Celtics in six. I think I was maybe a little higher on them than some other people, considering I think a lot of people had them in like five, maybe even four. So they are not deep, obviously, and that's an issue. Mitchell Robinson really can't stay on the floor for more than 20 minutes because they've been doing hack a Robinson. And outside of that, Miles McBride gets some burn, but then campaign, I mean, Precious Achiuwa, those dudes had a combined 8 minutes in game one. So they're really playing a seven-man rotation with little margin for error. I mean, Mikal Bridges played 51 minutes in game one. But again, their top five guys are legit. And this was not a very good Karl Anthony Towns game. Only 14 points, five fouls, did his classic dumb foul, getting foul trouble Karl Anthony Towns. And Brunson didn't shoot the ball well for the whole game, only 9-for-23. But he got that deadly hot streak down the stretch, and that's what he does. Even in the games he doesn't shoot well, he's still going to have stretches like that, which he can take over a game doing so. I also thought Josh Hart was super impactful in this game, 14 points, 11 rebounds. And they're using him a lot as a screener just because of how Boston is guarding them. They're putting the big on Hart, putting Tatum on Towns just so they can, you know, play off Hart, dare him to shoot. And that way, when they screen with Towns, it's Tatum switching onto the ball handler rather than their bigs. And so that's why the Knicks have been using Hart more as a screener. And I think they'll probably continue to do so just because of that. They want to get the big man onto Brunson rather than pull Tatum out there. And Bridges and Anunoby, Bridges did not shoot well, 3-for-13, but made, I mean, the game-clinching defensive play. I thought the two of them overall defensively were really good. And this was the exact kind of game of why they went out and got those two guys, because they made life really difficult for Boston's wings. And I think this was the matchup they had in mind when they got those guys. I don't anticipate Boston's wings to continue to play this poorly, like I said. So we'll see. But I want to give credit to the Knicks because they were gritty as hell. They fought like crazy to come back and made all the big plays down the stretch that Boston just couldn't. But I think a lot of it was self-inflicted for Boston also. Like I said, Tatum settling for jump shots, the team as a whole just not making shots that, you know, they've made all season long. They made all of last year, and they obviously benefited a little bit from Porzingis not being out there and Brown potentially being a little compromised as well. But panic meter, pretty low for me for Boston right now, but that could change quickly if Brown continues to struggle. Porzingis is out. Hauser misses a significant time. We'll see how it goes, but I expect Boston to bounce back in game two. Then the last series, we had the Nuggets upset the number one seed, best record in the league, Oklahoma City Thunder, who I've been, you know, praising all year long as this historically great team by the numbers, the eye test. They really have fit the bill all year long, but this was obviously not a great game for them. They led by around 10 points for the majority of this game, but Denver made a late run. The Thunder did the foul up three strategy. I thought they executed it very poorly. They were fouling very early, so they were essentially elongating the game, which is what Denver probably wanted. I also thought that they had a play where Jokic was not in the game and they were fouling and it was a live ball, so they couldn't check Jokic back into the game. And instead of them just letting it play out because Jokic wasn't out there, they foul Aaron Gordon immediately. I think probably it was because it was Gordon. I think if Murray had the ball, they probably wouldn't have fouled, because got to assume he's going to make both of those, and then you get Jokic back in the game after that anyway. But maybe they saw it was Gordon, so they jumped at that opportunity. But he shot the ball really well this year and obviously had the game-winning shot in this one, his second of the postseason, but this one from three with no hesitation. But I'm always a little hesitant in the follow-up three. It just depends on how you execute it. And I didn't think OKC executed this well. You got to let some time go off the clock. You really should only be doing it right before you think they're going to shoot, not just instantaneously, because the second you miss a free throw, then suddenly like you're giving them a huge advantage. And that's what happened. Chet goes 0 for 2 at the line, which makes it a 1-point game for Denver coming the other way. Russell Westbrook pushes the ball up the court. I was absolutely terrified that he was going to try to get to the basket and force something that was not there. I was almost 90% sure he was going to do it, but he made the right play and he kicks it out to Aaron Gordon, who knocks it down. And OKC's pretty much stunned at that point with no timeouts. They have to inbound it and take a half court heave that obviously was not going to go in. So Denver steals game one in Oklahoma City. For this one, I'm not overly worried for OKC. I still think they're going to win the series. I picked Oklahoma City in six. And so obviously I thought Denver was going to get a couple games. And the way this happened, I mean, really the way all these games have played out is like, each team needed like four or five different unlikely things to happen to go their way in order to win it. And that is what happened in this one too. You know, like the Thunder just could not inbound the ball. They go 0 for 2 at the line. Denver goes 6 for 6 on their fouls with the foul of three strategy. Like there was just a lot. I mean, even the Aaron Gordon shot, like I don't know if he makes that more often than he doesn't. So all of those things had to go wrong for them, and they did. But I'm sure they'll bounce back, because they really did dominate this game for most of it. But Jokic just was relentless. 42 and 22, 6 assists. I know he did have 7 turnovers, but it was just it was one of those games where it didn't really feel like he was playing that well for most of it. He was missing some shots around the basket, but he started to manipulate the game. You know, he was, for better or worse, doing a little bit of foul baiting, in my opinion, where he was trying to take advantage of that. And it worked. He had 10 free throws alone in just the fourth quarter. Hartenstein ended up with 5 fouls. Chet ended up with 5 fouls. So it was an effective strategy. And he's just, even the games it doesn't feel like he's playing crazy well. To a 40-20 game, in a game that for most of the game I was like, it wasn't a bad Jokic game, but it was kind of like a BB plus game. And then he still ends up with 40 and 20 and they eke it out in the fourth quarter. He is just unreal. He's ridiculous. And you see him coaching on the sideline too. He's basically a player coach for this team. It's pretty ridiculous. And Denver got some pretty good contributions across the board. I thought Russell Westbrook played really well, 18 points on 7 of 13 shooting. He continues to be, pretty feast or famine. I mean, he still has had some bad games, but he's had more good games than I ever would have thought in this postseason so far. So, you know, credit to him. And then Aaron Gordon has just been just spectacular for this team, 22 and 14. Obviously, it's the game winner, 3 of 6 from 3, 5 of 5 at the line with some big free throws when they were fouling as well. And he's been awesome on the defensive end too. He guarded Jalen Williams for large portions of this game, and Williams was 5 for 20 from the field. And, you know, the biggest question mark, not only for this season, but going into this year, last year for Oklahoma City, was, are they going to have a consistently reliable number two option next to Shai Gilgeous-Alexander? And a lot of people believe that Jalen Williams can be that. I have been on the record saying that I don't know if he will, but I know that I think he can. I think he's capable. I'm sure it would help for them to add, you know, another reliable 20 point per game guy. But I think Jalen Williams has shown enough that he should be able to fill that role for them. And on nights where he can't, you know, Chet has been really good. And I mean, we saw in the Memphis series, he was spectacular in that big comeback that they had. But 5 for 20 is 5 for 20. And they lose this game at home in game one as favorites. And so he's going to need to play better if they want to not only win the championship, but win this series. And that's going to be the big question. And I think the spotlight's going to be on him in the next game, because 5 for 20 is just not going to get it done. 2 for 9 from deep. He just was not effective in this game. And again, it sounds silly saying this because he had 40 and 20, but I thought that the bigs for OKC did a pretty good job guarding Jokic. I mean, he had 7 turnovers, as I mentioned, and a big chunk of his points came at the free throw line. So I thought from the field, they guarded him pretty well, and he wasn't able to command or dominate the game as a passer as much as we've seen him do in the past. But I'm not totally worried for OKC. Like I mentioned, I thought Denver would get a couple games in this series, and I think that this was an aberration type game with how it ended. It feels crazy because all of these games, you can kind of say that like the Knicks, the Pacers, they just pulled out these games that you didn't really see coming or expect, even though the other team kind of, for the most part, I won't say dominated, but controlled the game for most of it. And again, I think a lot of things had to go right for Denver for them to win this game. And I'm not sure that Jalen Williams is going to shoot 5 for 20 for the whole series, even though SGA ends up with 33, 10 and 8. He didn't shoot the ball particularly well, 12 for 26 from the field. They didn't get a whole lot out of Chet, 12 points, 6 rebounds, and a lot of their guys had foul trouble, which I think threw off their rotations a little bit as well. So I expect OKC to bounce back, but when you got Jokic, I've been saying this, look, the reason I picked Denver over the Clippers is not because I thought Denver had a better roster, not because I thought they were better coached, not because I thought they had a better team across the board, more talent, anything like that. It was really a bet on Jokic. I said that if you have Jokic in a series, you can win almost any series, especially when the other team has unreliable guys like James Harden and Kawhi Leonard. And that's how it played out. It was a tough, hard-fought series in 7, just as I thought it would be. But when it was nut crunch time, game 7, the Nuggets just blew them out of the water. And so I'm not saying that's going to happen to OKC. I'm just saying that when you got Jokic, you've got a chance. The guy's that insane. He's that special. He's that talented. He's that smart. He is just the best player in the world for a reason. And he's going to be a tough out. You know, if you look at Denver in the Jokic era, when he's had Murray playing and healthy, they've only lost one series ever that didn't go 7 games. And that was the bubble series when they lost to the Lakers in 5. That's the only one though. Every other series, they've either won or lost it in 7 games when they've had both of those guys. So they're a tough out. They just are. They're not a team that's going to roll over and get swept or lose in 5 or anything like that. And so that's why I picked this to go 6. I wouldn't be shocked if it went 7, even though I've been as high as anyone on OKC. I still think they are a juggernaut. I still think they're the favorite to win the West. I still think they're the favorite to win the NBA championship this season. But they're going to need to clean some things up in these crunch time situations, because Jokic is the best of the best in that situation. I know Brunson won clutch player of the year, but I'll take Jokic over him 10 out of 10 times if you ask me who I want with 2 minutes to go, because not only can he go get a shot for himself, but he's going to get a great look for his teammates as well. And just the way he controls the game is unlike anybody in the league right now. So again, not worried for the Thunder, but I think this was a good wake-up call for them, because you know that first round series was uncompetitive to say the least. And so better competition that they're playing now, I think that they'll come out ready to go in the next game, and this will get them level set for the type of teams that they're going to be playing the rest of the postseason. And that's going to do it for this episode of the Sean Jones NBA Show. Apologies again for the lack of content coming out. Just been a little busy on my side, traveling a little bit, had some work stuff going on. But I'm going to try to ramp up my frequency over the next few weeks. I'll definitely have a mid-series check-in for the second round, maybe early next week. Then once the second round starts to wrap up, I'll talk about those series. I'll preview the Western Conference and Eastern Conference Finals. Then I will be doing an individual episode for every NBA Finals game at that point. So a lot to talk about over the next few weeks, and we've had some awesome games and awesome series, as I mentioned. But with that said, thanks so much for listening, and I will chat with you soon.